The World Series is a wrap. The offseason is upon us. So let's talk about it and let's review what we've watched and what lies ahead here at the baseball offseason. It's the Mojo Break Dugout Session. It's Cody. It's Doug. One last time for the 2020 season. And Doug, I hate to break it to you. Breaking news, if you are you and I, Giants fans. They did it. Those bums finally did it.
Yeah.
The Dodgers won the World Series in six games. A very good World Series, I should say. It was a really enjoyable World Series. I was absolutely thrilled with Game 4, one of the craziest finishes I've ever seen in a World Series. But it kind of felt like a foregone conclusion even before the season began. This was the team that had to win it, really. Of all the teams in baseball, the Dodgers were the team that really had to win this for the season not to feel like a failure, even though with all the weirdness of the season, they go ahead and do it. And it kind of felt like it was inevitable from the get-go here, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the season, I picked the Dodgers and the A's, so obviously I was wrong on my A's. But the Dodgers, 32 years in the making. I've mentioned before that I let's not put an asterisk on the season. And I'm still not going to do that.
Oh, I'll put an asterisk on it.
I got to stay true to my word because it's not fair to their fans. It's not like their fans chose it. But as a Giants fan, it's hard not to say, well. But I will say it's about time. 32 years.
Yeah.
About time.
I mean, there is the, I'm sorry, Dodger fans. I have to say it. Like, in a regular season, we'd be in the All-Star game right now in terms of games played.
Yeah.
We'd be at the Midsummer Classic. The Dodgers play well at the beginning of the season and in the regular season. So they're in that groove right now. And so are the Rays, and so is everybody else. So I guess when you have to look at it that way, it's like, well, it's still an even playing field. Everybody played by the same rules. I understand the argument, too. So
yeah.
I just really pine for a nice, long regular season. I really miss having 162, and I really, really can't wait for regular baseball, whatever regular baseball looks like. Just give me a full 162.
They won the 2020 tournament, I guess you could say, if you want to feel a little bit better about it as a non-Dodger fan. Because, I mean, the Dodgers are probably the second most hated across baseball behind the Yankees, I would say, if you're not a fan of any of those teams.
I would say,
those are the easy villains to choose.
I would say them. The Red Sox were an easy punching bag, which is probably why every time Mookie Betts did something, I saw Mookie Betts trending and everybody going, man, those Red Sox must be loving that payroll flexibility right about now. Boy, wasn't it great? They got under the luxury tax this year. Man, they really, really made a good move getting rid of Mookie Betts, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's easy to hate both of those teams, and obviously we're talking about the Dodgers, is because they are able to spend the money, and it's an attractive place to play. I mean, Pirates put up the same kind of money as the Dodgers on a big free agent. Sorry, Pirates fans, they're going to the Dodgers. And I think that's one of the reasons why you learn to kind of hate that team, because it could be a little bit of a jealousy issue, but it's like,
totally.
You know, we could offer a better team and a little bit more money, but these stars keep going to New York and these stars keep going to L.A.
But the other thing is, and it's really both of these teams have such different philosophies, the Rays and the Dodgers, and we'll talk a little bit about what we saw in the World Series and just our postseason thoughts in general here. But really, they're both built sort of similarly, other than the Dodgers spend a lot of money. Obviously, Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers came from Tampa Bay,
mm-hmm.
so he brings that philosophy of building the team from the ground up. Every pitcher who started a game in this World Series for the Dodgers came from the organization. They were drafted by the organization, or they played their entire major league career in the organization. That is a pretty remarkable feat, and one you just don't see very often.
That's true.
Anymore.
I didn't even think about that. I take a little bit of my hatred back.
And you look at the stars, too. It's Corey Seager, who has played his entire career there. Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, who, yes, he was on the Oakland A's, but really a nice gem, a nice find, who has blossomed in L.A. That's a very Rays-like move to get Max Muncy.
Yep.
They seem like they're on completely different levels, but very much the same sort of philosophy. But let's talk a little bit about the games themselves. A six-game series that I thought really was a fantastic showcase for baseball until maybe the last hour or so, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But I think a great showcase for baseball. Unfortunately, it seemed like nobody was watching. There's so many reasons why that's happening. But that Game 4 was about as good a World Series game I think I've ever seen.
Me too.
And I think we got to talk about, though, before we go any deeper, the move in Game 6, which felt so much like if you're the type of person who says, I'm not into baseball anymore because it's all about the numbers. It's all about a robotic, like you could just, they're talking robo-umps. Well, you could have robo-managers.
Yeah.
And I think you were totally justified in feeling that way in Game 6 when Blake Snell, a former Cy Young Award winner, having a great postseason, was taken out in the sixth inning after just over 70 pitches, after just giving up two hits and striking out nine batters. And what happened? The Dodgers rallied. They end up getting the go-ahead run in that inning, what ends up being the winning run in that inning. Doug, I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm always going to love baseball, but this is why people are getting turned off by the game of baseball, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see those individuals kind of, you know, obviously like a Madison Bumgarner just coming out there, and the computer would absolutely probably not say Bumgarner plays in that game seven of that right. Royals World Series. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you're right. Well, in terms of a robot, it's just like they spit out scenarios. I'm sure every scenario is played through this Sabre kind of system. And, you know, seeing that, you know, he's already through the lineup twice, the third time through is coming through. I mean, the one argument I can make for the Rays is that there was only a one-run lead. I think if it was a 3-0 or 4-0, I think it'd be a different story. Sure. You know, so it's... Yeah, it's tough. I mean, in big moments, you do want to see those stars, and you are kind of eliminating the big names if you play baseball this way, right? Wasn't there a World Series or something or a big game where I can't remember the guy, but who had a horrible – I think it was Bellinger last year who had a horrible batting average against somebody, and they didn't play him in a pivotal game, and they lost that game. So, you know, things like that. I think you throw stats out the window. When the big moment comes, you should turn the computer off
and let
baseball be baseball.
You're totally right. Dave Roberts was criticized for much the same way. In fact, with I think it was when Farhan Zaidi was still there, now with the Giants, where they say, this is the way we run things. This is the way we do it. If the lineup is, if it's against a righty or if it's against a tough lefty, we're not starting Bellinger. Obviously, was proven to be a bad decision, and they played Bellinger most of the time, and he had a pretty good postseason near the end there. And the other part of it, too, is the Rays, who are, again, all about the math and the analytics and the stats. And, again, I'm not opposed to this. I'm not bashing on this. This is what baseball is now, and that's fine. And it's been proven to work, really, with a combination of the analytics plus a good payroll plus a good farm system. It all works. You got to do everything. It's got to be a nice balance. But in Game 4, Brett Phillips comes up. Brett Phillips, who is one of the worst hitters, arguably the worst hitter on the team, and in that exact situation against that type of pitcher, I think statistically, Brett Phillips had the lowest batting average in baseball in that position, and he got the game-winning hit of Game 4. It happens. Baseball's a weird game. Sometimes weird things happen. So you kind of have to go with your gut sometimes. And frankly, it's great when there's fun moments where, like, Randy Johnson coming in Game 7 after pitching the day before in 2001. You mentioned Madison Bumgarner coming in Game 7 in 2014. These are legendary moments that are incredible that people talk about for years and that I think bring people into the game. And I think that was a big blow for baseball, the Blake Snell moment in Game 6. And I honestly don't know how Kevin Cash comes back from this. I don't know. Did you catch any of what the Rays players were saying after the game?
Like, I did not. I'm sure it was pretty a negative point.
Yeah, they were all in Blake Snell's corner. Not a single person was saying, I get it. That's what we do here. Everybody was saying Blake's our guy, and he's the guy who got us here. Blake Snell also likes to talk a lot on Twitch. I will be very excited for his first 1 a.m. Twitch stream where he's
playing some video games or something.
Yeah,
or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you remember a couple years ago. What was it? I think it was like Will Myers on the Padres was on a Twitch stream with his teammate talking smack about their then manager saying, oh, we're doing hitting drills here. And it's the last week of the season. We're 10 games out of first place. What are we doing? expect that times a million from Blake Snell in about
I'll have to tune
time.
In. That'll be good.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure that'll be viral at some point.
Oh
I mean,
God.
I almost compare, and gut is the point here, because in life, you make decisions that are really hard, and you go, at the end of the day, you go with your gut. You don't put it in a computer and say, what's the percentage I should take this job over this job, or, you know, other life decisions that you have to make. And I'm going to make some ridiculous analogies here, but I wanted to compare it to other sports. Just imagine if, like, Michael Jordan didn't match up well against the Jazz, and they pulled him out in the third quarter, fourth quarter. I know that's a whole different sport, but or football. Maybe there's a star quarterback. Like, let's say Tom Brady had to sit for Josh Rosen because Josh Rosen can throw a 40-yard pass longer than Brady, and you're using the computer. No, you go with the guy that got you there. You go with your potential Cy Young winner.
Yep.
And you throw the computer out of the window. Yeah, maybe during the 162-game season when you have to grind out games, maybe then is when you can use it. But I think when it comes to the postseason, you have to go with what you see. And that's what I think Bochy did really good.
I think it's just about making an informed decision.
Yep.
If that's what it is. And using everything to your advantage. I think it's fine to use the computers and say, you know what, third time around the lineup, it does get worse. Statistically, this is what happens. But then the other side has to think, look at the way he's throwing. Look at the way he's dealing right now. 0-for-6 against the next three hitters, who are the heart of that Dodger lineup. He's got 9 strikeouts. His velocity is not going down. That's part of the analytics too.
Yeah.
So it's just
also
about,
it makes me wonder. Do the analytics take into account? You know, and this is just a broad statement here, but do the analytics take into account that maybe he didn't like throw a fastball for like three pit? You know, maybe he didn't throw a slider.
I mean, that's about just the velocity. So in his velocity was maybe down a tick, but not to the point where you say he's getting tired. Like he was doing everything that you expect a guy to do, and the only thing holding him back was it's the third time around the lineup. He gave up the hit. Now's the time.
Well, I mean, what the point I was trying to make was is like, say, you know, some pitchers have, you know, deep repertoires of pitches where they're not showing, like, say their slider or their changeup early in the game. And then they get to that third time in the order, and they're like, okay, now I'm going to introduce this pitch because they've been going against my slider and my fastball. Now I'm going to use the changeup. So, I mean, I don't know how analytics can be put into play. Like, well, you know, 7 batters out of lineup, he didn't do a curveball. You know, right. You know, so there's like that too, right? So if you're like, wow, his curveball wasn't even used. And sometimes guys can't throw it for that game and they get away from it. But, you know, like that's where I don't think the analytics could ever be right. Is how effective pitches are and the moment.
I think, though, there's so many now about, you know, spin rate and exit and velocity and all that stuff that does get taken into account in the analytics. I really think the point is all of that is great. It's great to have that at your disposal. It's great to have those numbers at a moment's notice and to study up. But there's also just the in-game. You got to make a decision. Don't let it dictate your decision. Don't let it be the end-all, be-all. Let it inform your decision. That's all really that we're asking for here. If a guy's dealing, let him keep dealing. You know, sometimes you just gotta.
Well, and there's also something to be said about people keeping their jobs. Like, how many NFL coaches that are losing go for the field goal when they're down by 20 points,
right?
Just so that the points get on the board. So at the end of the day, they don't lose their job. How easy is it to be like, well, you should have kept in Snell, you're fired. If you went down with Snell, it's like, well, that was the right decision, right? So it's like when you make these one-off decisions that seem out of the ordinary, I'm sure it piles up on your job at the end of the day. And you went like, he went for too many long shots here to make the game work, and now he's fired. I mean, that's what I think. You know, the coaches have to keep their job, and if they keep running this unconventional way of doing it, they're going to lose their jobs faster than –
It's going to be an interesting decision. I mean, Kevin Cash has been a very good manager for a few years here and doing a lot with very little in Tampa Bay. But this is going to be a big decision. If the players are not on his side, which right now they are not, he's going to have to do a lot to earn their trust back, or Tampa's going to have to move on. And I could see them moving on.
Yeah.
Even after a World Series berth, just the way that was handled. I mean, it's going to go down as one of the worst managerial decisions in World Series history.
Absolutely.
So, that seemed like it was going to be the biggest story coming out of Game 6. And then the Dodgers win the World Series, celebrations in LA, great job. And literally minutes later, we find out that our old, I was going to say friend, but that doesn't seem right. Our mortal enemy, COVID, came and reared its ugly head in Major League Baseball. Baseball has done a very good job over this last month and a half of keeping it out of the game after two terrible scares with the Cardinals and the Marlins. This whole postseason bubble felt like, wow, it's going to be a huge success. Even with fans, it's going to be a huge success. And then we find out Justin Turner got COVID middle of the game, or at least
was it announced? And that's what I was going to ask. Did it get announced after the game? Because I was trying
to pay
attention.
After the game was over, it got announced.
So, but he got pulled, and did he get pinch hit, or did somebody just go out there for him?
He got pulled as a defensive replacement, I believe, in the middle of the game. Was it the sixth or seventh inning? I can't quite remember.
So going into that half of that inning, so we just thought it was a defensive move on the go, right?
No one knew. It just felt like maybe they're making a defensive move. Maybe there's an injury we don't know about. It was kind of just no one thought about it. No one was thinking anything of it. And then we find out he got taken out of the game because there was an inconclusive COVID test earlier in the day. Middle of the game, they find out he's tested positive. They rush him out of the game. They isolate him for what? I don't know. About 2 hours, maybe? And then he's out there.
Maybe not even that, right? Maybe like an hour.
Yeah. And then he's out there on the field with no mask.
No gloves,
kissing the trophy, kissing his wife, giving everybody hugs, dapping everybody up. I don't know.
Insanity.
What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple layers to peel off here. Like, first off, it's so easy to go into conspiracy mode here because it's like, why was it inconclusive? Was that on purpose? Because, hey, this could be the last game and we're done with it. Let's finish it rather than, like, take the right precautions. It's kind of like, yeah, we're almost at the end. Just, let's just not talk about it. And then feeling the pressure probably from other people involved, the decision was made, but then it wasn't really announced until after the game. It's just – and then, yeah, the whole fact that he obviously knew at that moment when he was celebrating that he had it. We may give him a pass of not knowing for the first 8 innings that he had it.
Sure.
But he absolutely knew at the end. And you know, I know maybe in your life you only have, you know, that moment. He may only have that moment once in his life, and he made that selfish decision to just participate in that moment.
I mean, but the Dodgers were saying that. I mean, the MLB press release that came out yesterday, I think the quote was he emphatically refused to go along with MLB security's
So they were request. Trying to stop him.
They were trying to stop him from going on the field. He refused. The Dodgers said let him on the field. We're taking the risk. So they
did every player agree?
I mean, that's the thing. How can they all agree that quickly?
Right.
Dave Roberts is a cancer survivor, and he's sitting there with Justin Turner. Like, it's just it boggles the mind, Doug. It just is a wild, wild moment that felt so 2020. And look, the Dodgers, this is a failure for them. And they immediately go from the darlings of baseball to everybody kind of taking a side here.
Yeah, it's like they peed in the pool again.
Right. It's Justin Turner, obviously. There's a lot of personal responsibility from him to do that. Frankly, it was a selfish move. And I'm not a huge fan of it at all. I'm not a fan of it whatsoever. It's just a terrible look for him and for the Dodgers. But let's not forget, Major League Baseball didn't just have to be like, hey, don't go on the field. No, I'm not going to go on the field. Okay, then go ahead. What are they doing?
Right. There needs to be, you know,
they
one of those.
They need to force him. Like,
the finest security out there that are like, you're going to have to get through us.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Why was that not happening? And I know he's positive for COVID. And I know that's putting you in the line of fire if you're literally having to physically force him to not go on the field. But if that's what it's going to take right now, like, I don't know. It's a complete failure from the top. And that kind of leads us to the next part of this conversation, which is Rob Manfred, who what was going on with Rob Manfred there at the end of the World Series? I don't know. Was he completely shaken about the Justin Turner news? Did he down a couple of oat sodas beforehand to kind of ease the pain of having to announce that one of the guys on the field had COVID in the middle of the final game of the season? And just sounded like he was slurring his words. And I think even more so, I think he was really rattled by the fact that he was getting deafening boos from a stadium that was barely a quarter full.
Yeah.
It barely a quarter full when it was at capacity.
You know, and this is my point of view on this, obviously not facts, but it almost seems like he was part of the cover-up in a sense where he, like, knew that – and he may have been getting pressure from other people. Once again, this is allegedly, this is not facts. But, you know, it just seemed like that, oh, man, I can't let this out. We got to finish this. If we announce that Turner had COVID in the middle of the day, we may have to shut down for weeks. How is this going to work? We only have the stadium. All these things are, like, running with the TV rights. What are we doing? Like, we got to beat football or we got to at least have some good ratings. 100%. Like, nobody's going to tune in a week. Everybody's going to say baseball's a failure, that I failed. Let's make the game happen. And I think it was one of those things then that he probably knew it was getting announced through social media around the eighth inning. So I almost view it as, you know, those big glass bottles of hard liquor that are on, like, businessmen's desks that you see in the movie when somebody comes in and they're like,
right,
let's share a drink. I think he ran back to that office and I think he chugged. Like, he chugged it because he was like, I got to get numb to deal with what I'm about to face for this whole situation. And then he probably didn't even think about in that moment that I got to talk. Crap.
I got to talk to, I mean, like I said, they made 11,000 people made, and probably less than that, because probably a lot of people left before the Dodgers ceremony, made that place sound like it was 40,000 full of booing fans. And I'm not sure that Manfred has ever faced that level of vitriol from the fans yet. Unlike, you know, Gary Bettman, who is just almost revels in it now in the NHL, and like Roger Goodell, who just like doesn't even care about it. He also embraces it. I don't think he's faced that. And I think, frankly,
yeah, he looks like more timid than any of those guys,
yes,
right?
Yes.
A little bit unsure.
Which kind of speaks to how the whole COVID situation with Turner was handled.
Yeah.
If he had a little more gravitas to him, maybe he puts his foot down and says, no. No celebration on the field. We can't do this. We're putting all of us at a risk. I'm sorry, Dodger fans. You can't do it. And to me, it just speaks to just what a complete and utter failure he has been.
He's probably looked at the worst amongst any sport commissioner.
He's the worst now.
But I think he politics both sides, and probably that's why it probably ran through his mind that he was going to throw Justin Turner under the bus. But at that point, he's like, well, then I hurt myself, you know? So, and then the Dodgers are against me by saying, then it was like, well, then you're wrapped up in a scandal if he doesn't back up or say, so he just basically avoided it all, right? So, I don't know if he's had any, I'm sure he's had some press conferences since or some official statements on that I have not noticed yet, but I don't know. You almost have to be like a Roger Goodell where what you say, people may not agree with, but you have to do it your way, and you'd have to not
your
politic on
highway.
Both sides.
Yeah, 100%. He doesn't have that. I don't think he's earned that respect, especially the way this whole season went down. Where, I mean, remember back in June, it felt like we weren't even going to have a season for a moment there, where the players and the owners were so far apart.
Yep.
And Manfred clearly took a side. You know, he did not take the side of the players. He took the side of the owners. And it felt like the wrong side. It just in general, I don't think you can get away with that anymore. Where I think there was a time where fans were not as informed. You didn't have social media. You didn't have the internet where you could find all these resources about what these owners are making and all that stuff. Where you could pin it on the players and say, boy, they don't want to play. They make a lot of money. Sure, they sure make a lot of money, don't they? And they don't want to play. Where you can't do that anymore. I think people know, like, no, it's the owners that we're against here when it comes to players versus owners.
Yeah, and in terms of baseball, it seems like every candidate that goes up for commissioner is either for business or for the players.
Yeah, I mean,
and it seems like the business guys are what's getting in, right?
Right. I mean, they're ultimately working for the owners. That's their job. That's Manfred's job. To me, it's just everything has been such a disaster so quickly, too. It felt like, Goodell and Gary Bettman really held that crown for worst commissioner in sports, and now Manfred is totally caught up to them.
Hold my beer, right? Literally.
The pace of play initiatives, which I think have been totally, sort of the right idea, but completely misguided. The rules that were instituted this year, I get this things like the doubleheaders, the less games, but like the runner at second and extra innings, which he apparently wants to keep. The extra playoff teams, which it did make for exciting baseball, but I don't want 16 teams in the playoffs every single year. Do they really want the Chicago Cubs out in two games? Like, is that what they want in the postseason? I just don't, man. And you know what? And on top of it all, this was one of the worst rated World Series in years. And I know there's so many factors, but that's kind of on Manfred too for not being
How long is his, like, when does somebody else, when does he get up for renewal?
2024.
Okay.
But there is a CBA. There is a collective bargaining agreement in a couple of years. Man, I could see him. To me, I would love nothing more than to see him shown the door in the next couple of years before that contract runs through. He has just, I think, doing so much damage to the game of baseball and is not, he's trying to change so many things that don't need to be changed. There are things about baseball that need to be changed. I will not question that, but he's doing it to me in all the wrong ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a complete failure on his part. And you know what? If he's not healthy or something, then that's not good because he did not seem well.
Yeah, but somebody was sacked. That was the other point. If it's that, then apologies about the liquor analogy. But, you know, yeah, if it's a health issue, you know, then I really feel bad for the guy having to deal with all this pressure of this year.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you got to know that.
I would definitely announce that, though, if that was me. I mean, that would, like, start making sense right. to everybody else
right.
out there.
Exactly. He's just done too much damage at this point where something's got to give. A lot of blame to throw around there. Ultimately, I'm going to go Manfred. Obviously, Turner needs to take personal responsibility. The Dodgers need to take responsibility. But to me, this moment, the way this all ends, so reflective.
Yeah, I mean, he could have the job. Back to Justin Turner, he could have easily said, you know what, I'm not going out there. But anybody that wants to throw champagne with me in – well, I guess they filmed that too, but, you know, at least he might have a mask on there and then people have the option to go in there with him. Like, hey, I'm going to be in that back corner of the room throwing champagne up. I tested positive for COVID, but, you know, if you guys don't care, then come party with me over here, you know, just basically forcing them to be around him. Bad luck.
Well, it's a bad look, especially, I mean, the one thing that went through my mind as we'll wrap up our thoughts here on this topic. There was a pitcher on the Red Sox this year, Eduardo Rodriguez. He's 27 years old. He got COVID before the season starts. He never played this season. He had a heart problem that was caused by COVID.
Yeah.
Never got to play this year. So then to see Justin Turner do that, it's just a bad look. A bad look for everybody involved, and it starts from the top.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Well, it was a fun season, despite it being 60 games, and despite a pretty sour ending there. So we're going to talk about some of the biggest names this season, some of the biggest players, some of the biggest moments that we've seen this season. We're going to focus on the hobby, as we always do, and talk about the awards for the 2020 MLB season. We're going to hand out some hardware, and we're going to start with some of the breakout players in baseball and the top rising stars in the hobby. So I think some pretty obvious names here. Number one on the list, though, Randy Arozarena, who did in that game six the only run for the Rays. Lo and behold, it was Randy Arozarena, a solo home run in the first inning, the 10th of the postseason for him. And I should say, yes, he did get two extra games. He hit zero home runs in that wild card round. So he hit 10 home runs the regular way, the way in the same amount of
and
games.
And what's the record?
It was 8 prior to this.
Oh, okay.
Corey Seager also tied that record, by the way.
Wow.
A wild postseason for home runs. But he is the hot name right now. He's going to be the hot name all offseason. But, of course, I think we got to talk about three other rookies that we were talking about a lot during the regular season. Kyle Lewis, who may be the American League Rookie of the Year. A great year for the Mariners. Slowed down there a bit at the end. But I think the thing for me, for him, incredible defense, great patience at the plate. I think a really bright future for him. Ryan Mountcastle, who came on late in the season and just lit it up, at one point was leading all American League rookies in almost every batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage. Remarkable end of the season for Ryan Mountcastle, and another guy who I think's got a very bright future. And then the guy who has been the name in the hobby now for the last year or so, Luis Robert, for the Chicago White Sox. A huge home run in that series against Oakland. Just a monster shot. So he definitely got to have the national attention there for a bit. But all in all, I would say a bit of a letdown for him this year. I know the power was there and there were flashes of greatness, but I think there is still some, he still needs a little bit of seasoning there. Of course, he's on a very good team with very good players. In fact, I don't know if you saw, they just hired Tony La Russa to be their manager. 76-year-old Tony La Russa to be their manager. That's a interesting move, to say the least. But, Doug, who are you picking for your top rising star in the hobby?
So, yeah, I was going to preface this by saying if I'm picking as a fan for who I think is going to be a player I want on my team, I'm picking Kyle Lewis. But if I'm picking in the hobby as an investment, I'm going Luis Robert. Luis Robert has that same swagger that you kind of see when Fernando Tatis is on the field. That same kind of persona that Acuna has when he's on the field. And I think that speaks to a lot more fans out there in the hobby, particularly. They want to see the 550-foot home runs that he's going to hit. You know, they want to see him running in front of Eloy Jimenez across the field and getting that catch. Yes, he hit 233, I think, to end the season. He had a whole really, really bad month. I don't know if we played a full season, if we would have had, you know, we probably would have seen something different because he did start to get hot in the playoffs. Played a really good series against the A's, I think was the standout on that team for that series against the A's, but unfortunately they lost. And I think there's so many people invested in his cards that I think the value's protected, and I think the investment is there when he does blow up, becomes maybe Tatis or Acuna. So as far as who I would invest in, given those guys, I'm going Luis Robert.
Yeah, and you're probably right. He's got the smile. He's got the right location, playing in Chicago.
Yep.
Playing around really good players. He's one of the youngest guys on. He might be actually the youngest guy on this list of four players we have here. Yeah, I think that's definitely the favorite in the clubhouse here. Lewis with a great year. Mountcastle also, both of them with great years. But I am going to go with the hot pick right now. I am going to go with the hot name and say Randy Arozarena, who, I mean, to do it at the highest level in baseball, to do it with not only the home runs, to be the winning run that slide in game four, that's going to be like the indelible moment for the Rays in this series, that big smile on his face as he's slamming down the home plate. It was such a great moment for him to have on top of everything else. I said last week on our last episode, as we were doing a World Series preview, that I would sell him now.
Yeah.
But I actually, now watching him again on the top stage, he's just 25. You look at the minor league numbers, you look at his numbers in the Mexican League, and you say, this might not just be a one-time thing. This guy might actually be the real deal. I think I've heard that the Cardinals front office said, yeah, we made a mistake with that. This guy was the real deal, and we should have held on to him. The Rays are going to need to get some offensive firepower around him, maybe bringing Wander Franco up next year to have him, Rosarena, Adamas is a nice middle of the order suddenly for Tampa Bay. He's got the swag and with the cowboy boots. I think he's one of the he may be the first guy to really buck the trend for Tampa Bay, especially doing it on the top stage in baseball. I would love to see what he does in 162 next year. I actually do think that he is going to keep this up and become a star. I really like what I saw from him.
Well, you know, one thing we're going to have to see, and obviously Luis Robert felt victim to this earlier, but there's always that hump to get over once there's enough tape on you.
They're going
to
figure him out at some point.
So you're going to see that at some point. You're going to see him struggle. And that's going to dictate, I think, if he can turn it around, how his mental's going to do. Because you'll see guys that have, like, I feel like Pete Alonso never broke out of that hump. Aaron Judge broke out of that hump, but he had that hump. You know, there's that thing that, like, okay, back foot slider can't hit. All right, we're going to pitch to him every time until he figures it out. And some guys never do. So that'll be the interesting thing. And I think Luis Robert hit it. I'm not going to say he necessarily broke out of it, but he did have a good series against the A's. So I you know, unless Arozarena is never hits that, and he's just an amazing player.
Yeah, the one thing maybe to his benefit, the fact that he's playing in Tampa, not going to be as much attention on him.
True.
So if he does slump for a little bit, maybe people
don't
notice.
Nobody cares.
And then the moment he breaks out and has a huge hot streak again, everyone will probably be talking about him again. So, yeah, so as long as he's the old, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, if an Arozarena slumps in Tampa Bay, does anyone actually hear it? I guess not. We're going to move on to the MVPs of the hobby. Three guys who clearly are not just the MVPs of the hobby, but maybe your three brightest stars in the game. You throw in Mookie Betts there as well, who really, I think, there's some argument now for Mookie Betts after that World Series. Is he the face of baseball now at this point? That's definitely a discussion that would be fun for another time. But I think for us in the hobby, the three guys that I want to focus on here are three nominees. Juan Soto, I got to throw him in there. He was just too damn good this year.
I know. And
he, what, sat out almost a month because of that COVID scare.
Yeah, imagine if he was playing the whole season, right? We the Nationals would probably have been in there and maybe gone all the way again.
Very well. They very well could have. I mean, they were the defending champions. They missed Juan Soto for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he goes ahead and becomes the best hitter in baseball for the 2020 season. Unfortunately, they don't make the postseason, so he can't replicate that incredible 2019 postseason. But he just turned 22 years old. 22!
Yeah, I know. He's so young. It seems like he should be like 28. But.
Yeah, exactly. Just to think what he's already accomplished in such a short amount of time, there is a definite Mike Trout parallel here, I think, for Juan Soto, and he's already got that ring. One of the most exciting young players in baseball. Speaking of, Fernando Tatis Jr. has been a hot name in the hobby for a while, and he came on strong in 2020. Did kind of regress there at the end of the season, did kind of slump, but had some incredible moments in the postseason, that huge home run against the Cardinals and that great comeback in the wild card round. Obviously, the Grand Slam in Texas. There was an amazing catch earlier in the season that he made, almost looked like Air Jordan. He was an incredible player, and that's what baseball needs, is a guy who mm-hmm. has all of that style, all that swag, and has these highlight reel moments almost every single night. He brings that. He's mm-hmm. one of the first guys to bring that on a consistent basis in a while. And it shows not only in the game of baseball that he's becoming so popular, but in the hobby, obviously, people love him. And then we have to throw in Mike Trout, because he's Mike Trout. And when you have a card that sells for the most ever in the modern era, during the season, you got to be on the list. So,
absolutely.
Who do we got? Who is the MVP of the hobby in 2020?
I think it's got to be Fernando Tatis. But I almost compare it to, like, people are going to hate me for saying this, but like Barry Bonds when he was at the height of what he was doing, and then you had Jeter, you know. So I actually kind of think like Trout, and he upholds a lot of those baseball traditions by not showing off and doing all that. So you got the Trout and you got Tatis bringing in the next like younger crowd. I mean, Jeter and Bonds were a little bit closer in age than I think, you know, than we have here. But I think it's like that once Bonds and like those guys retired, I think Jeter was the face of baseball mm-hmm. for a while, you know. So that's kind of how I see it. But for the MVP of this year, I have to give it to Tatis for what he did for the hobby. I think you had some guys that were struggling and, you know, some guys that did. You had Yelich not playing well at the beginning. You had some teams that were expected to do well that weren't doing well. And those people kind of started gravitating to watch Tatis and how electric he was.
Yeah, he really was. For 2/3 of this season, he was the talk of the game. He was the talk of baseball. And then came back in the postseason, had an incredible postseason. It feels like the obvious answer. It's got to be Tatis. I would almost say Trout just because of that record setting, that record.
And he had a really great year.
And this was a quote unquote off year for Trout, and he had a great year. But really, the thing holding him back is the fact that he just can't get to the highest stage in baseball. No fault of his own. They don't have any pitching on that team. They desperately need to get some pitching, and we know that the Angels love to spend in the offseason.
We'll I can't wait to see, like, Game 7 of whatever kind of series, and, you know, the Angels are down by one. There's two on, Trout's up. You know, just, like, I want to see that moment.
He needs
that
moment. He needs that moment. That's the thing, is that Trout is bar none the best player in baseball, but the fact that he's not the face of baseball is just because we haven't seen him enough. That's really what it is. That's why guys like Mookie Betts, that's why guys like a lot of these Dodgers, a lot of the Dodger team, really, because we've just seen them so much. And that's why these guys are the faces of baseball.
And I think you'll get people to, like, turn their channel when they get alerts that Trout's going to be up in the playoff of the World Series, right? I mean, I don't think you really got that much from maybe Mookie Betts, but like nobody other, maybe Rosarena after people caught on. Mm-hmm. But I think Trout is one of those guys that's like, all right, it's like the third inning. I'm going to make sure I tune into his at bat, you know, like, especially on a wider stage, which you may see those Nielsen ratings go up if you have that face of baseball in that big moment. People want to see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure he's – I just think that, yeah, because he's not flashy, that kind of goes against him for his long-term – you know, his long-term value as the face – or his chance at the face of baseball, because I think guys like Tatis, Mookie Betts, these guys I think are just more interesting and fun and bright personalities than Trout is, who kind of just goes about his business and does his thing. But, yeah, certainly that'll ramp up the interest in him and – definitely give him more of a case, but
he almost seems like a Russell Wilson right now. If you had to compare him to a quarterback in the NFL, Russell Wilson will never say anything bad. Always, always just, you know, good old boy. But then you have like, Lamar Jackson, who's flashy, right? You know, and there's nothing wrong with either style, but I think you kind of can compare the two right there. And I think Russell Wilson and Mike Trout are, you know, they just kind of stay in their lane. They get their job done, and they're electric. People want to watch them. I mean, more people were watching Russell Wilson than they were watching the World Series that night.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
You know, and that's why I think that if Mike Trout goes into that big situation, I think baseball is going to see, you know, maybe some fans tuning in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that does happen in his career. I do hope it does. Trevor Bauer's sitting there this offseason, and it just feels like a pretty easy connection for the Angels and Trevor Bauer. They need a pitcher. He's from SoCal. It just makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
But it's Tatis. Tatis is the guy this year. He was the most talked about player in the hobby. He's the most talked about player probably in baseball. He plays a position that is flashy, that people love, that makes the highlight reel plays. Just having a guy at shortstop that good at a premium position like shortstop, we saw, you know, back in the 90s where it was guys like Garcia Parra and Jeter and A-Rod and Tejada. Like, these guys were huge names.
Right.
And part of the reason is because they play that position where you're in the middle of everything. Tatis is in the middle of everything. He's incredibly fun. He's on one of the most exciting teams in baseball.
Yep.
The future is really bright for him, sky high, and easily not only the MVP this year, could be the MVP in the hobby for many years to come.
Yep, absolutely.
And we'll wrap things up, Doug, here with product of the year in baseball. We've got 2020 Leaf Lumber Kings. We've got Donruss Optic Baseball and Bowman Sapphire Baseball. Doug, I'll let you take the lead on this one. Which product here do you think is probably the MVP for collectors in 2020?
And we've got more products coming out for 2020, so it's kind of hard to have an awards show, but it kind of goes along with the World Series ending, the season ending. So we'll talk about what came out so far right now. And there was some surprising picks when I was going through the list. And I mainly went for, like, innovation, something that's kind of, like, more unique that we don't see all the time. I think, and I'll go over all three. Lumber Kings, I felt like when I first read the solicitation, I was like, wow, there's going to be mostly bat relics, which, you know, from a hobby standpoint, was like, bat relics are kind of, you know, there's so many of them, who cares? But the great job that Leaf did in terms of using the bat knobs, the bat plates, different pieces of the bat, incorporating autographs, incorporating like a card that had Barry Bonds, Mickey Mantle on the same card, and then in terms of stats, which, because they don't have the license, allowed them to kind of get more creative. So I thought it was a really fun set, and you know, the price from when it started to where it's at now really reflects that. Optic, I like because another reason is they don't have the MLB license. They have the Players Association license, and they can kind of combine prospects and rookies more so than what Topps does. So you've got Optic that you can hit Jason Dominguez and Randy Arozarena in the same product. There's a lot more depth to it. The parallels are fun. They always do exciting things. The on-card autos look great. As far as my pick for the year, I'm going to give it to Sapphire Topps. They did their best of bringing the parallels back. I think basketball and football have been destroying baseball in terms of non-autograph content. And I think with having Sapphire, with only having the one autograph, you're seeing the Luis Robert base going for $200 because it was Sapphire. You were seeing the Jason Dominguez doing well. So, and you're seeing it with Topps Chrome Sapphire, so you can almost lump those in together. But my pick right now for early award for 2020 is going to be the Bowman Chrome Sapphire.
There you go. And, yeah, if you're going to ask me, I am not, I don't know if this is like a snobby take, but yeah, give me the one that's like the officially licensed by MLB. I'll always kind of gravitate towards that. I do love a great, like the Bat Relics release. Lumber is really cool, but yeah, I think I've got to go with the one that's, like you said, too. Also seems like the one that if you get a big hit on it, it's got the longest shelf life, the Bowman Sapphire.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. From an investment, I mean, you can look at it a couple ways. You're going to pay $500 for a Sapphire box and you could get absolutely destroyed on your value. Or you could get the big hit and it's worth thousands of dollars, and then maybe even for years to come it's worth even more if it's that big name. You're not going to get really hurt that bad in optic, and you're not going to get really hurt that bad. So it's kind of a risk-reward scenario. But I think at the end of the day, for me, I do like to keep the cards that have the light, you know, the logo, the rookie card logo, the team logo on it type thing. So I lean more towards that. But I could see sometimes you make the argument like, I can get three optic boxes or two for one Sapphire, and I'm going to get like six autos plus much more parallels. It's going to last longer. So there's definitely those arguments to be made.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week and for this season. Doug, any final thoughts on the 2020 Major League Baseball season as we wrap it up?
It's about time, Dodgers.
It's about time. Yeah, who's next? We've got Cleveland. We've got what? Seattle, who knows when Seattle's ever going
to
do it.
So I say that the Giants took, what, 50-something years to get it anyway.
52 years, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, but, yeah, I'm looking forward to 162-game season. Hopefully that happens. I'm looking forward to minor league baseball again.
Yeah.
Hopefully that happens.
That's going to be interesting. That's a huge story that I feel like we kind of talked about a little bit this season. A huge story I feel like that hasn't really been talked about, the fact that we're getting hopefully getting minor league baseball next year, a much different version of minor league baseball, less teams, it sounds like. What kind of effect that's going to have, not only on the major league product, but in the hobby. It's going to be a lot of repercussions for a lot of players involved, you know, both on and off the field for minor league baseball, as much as minor league baseball is concerned, I should say. I'm also looking forward to, as much as I thought the postseason with a neutral site was interesting, I'm ready for, you know, let's go back home and, you know, hopefully maybe mid-season we can start having fans again. I don't know. Fingers crossed. Who knows? But I will be really happy to see them back at home. And that felt like the thing that was missing this postseason, and maybe why some of the viewership numbers went down. Yeah. It's just not as electric when you're not in your home field with your home fans. So hopefully.
And I mean, and think about the content. One last point here. Think about the content of the minor league system that also adds, like, okay, you know, this guy, Casey Mize, threw a no-hitter. That's the future for the Tigers. Mm-hmm. So maybe that fans, like, you know, the Tigers aren't good now, but I'm going to start watching some Tiger games to see when Casey Mize fits in, too. Right. So you do lose. I mean, as much as people don't watch minor league baseball, that news does transcend into the sport.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And, you know, it affected a lot of guys this year. We saw in San Francisco, Joey Bart basically played half of a season this year when he probably shouldn't have.
Right.
He probably should have been in AAA, getting more seasoning. Sounds like that's what they're going to do next year. The clocks are going to change for a lot of guys, either for bad or for worse. It's going to be a very interesting to see the fallout of what that means. So hopefully we get some minor league baseball. I'd really like that, and really more than anything, give me a full 162.
Yes.
I beg of you.
Absolutely.
All right, that's going to be it for us. We'll be back periodically throughout the off season. We've got winter meetings. We've got MLB free agency. Hot stove time is upon us. I love hot stove. I'm just refreshed.
Oh, yeah, the scenarios, the possibilities.
I refresh MLB trade rumors about every hour during this time of year, so I'm into it. And, of course, you can check us out, mojobreak.com, and our YouTube channel here, Mojo Break Media. Subscribe to us, like the video. We would greatly appreciate it. And, of course, our main feed, Mojo Break, for all of your live group breaks, personal boxes, and much more. For Doug, I'm Cody. Thanks for joining us all season long right here on the Mojo Break Dugout Session.